Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted. This is your trigger warning. This podcast contains unfiltered conversations about trauma, abuse, and survival. Discretion is advised. This is not therapy or medical advice, just real people sharing real stories. So please take care of yourself and pause if you need to. If this conversation hits home, grab the book Survival Mode Exit Plan, your raw, unapologetic blueprint to break free. Available now by scanning the QR code or clicking the link in the comments. Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. This is your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and I have with us today Zoe. Zoe, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, so I am Zoe Michaels. And I have recently started writing books. And the funny thing is, it what took me from obscurity to let me put myself out there was, of all things, being scammed. And not for the first time. It was actually my second time being scammed, which is what makes it more shocking, because having been scammed once, I thought I knew what to watch for. I had been hypervigilant. If I saw something remotely scammy, delete, it's gone, you know, oh, you're a scammer. But after several years passing and being in a business where I was trying to be more involved online and social networking, putting myself out there in ways I wouldn't typically choose to be out there, I responded to a message from a very normal looking person. They weren't hyper, you know, good looking or anything. And it was a situation where I was hoping to gain his business. And it was a very professional exchange that we had. It wasn't the typical, oh, you're so pretty, you look good, you know, flower hearts nonsense, right? It was very professional exchanges. So it was very subtle. But even at that, I had a wary eye. When we spoke and we had a lot of common ground and interesting things that he was volunteering, not so he had to have been spying on me for a while to have a sense of what would appeal. I still had this sense like, let me just be watchful, not because of anything they said or did, but because I had been burned before. So when we had our exchanges, I actually had on my notepad where his contact information was possible scammer. I had that where I saw it every time I saw their name, I saw possible scammer because I wanted to continue to be vigilant. And what I learned from this second experience is that, and maybe other people wiser than me know of this already, but their methods change, or some scammers are far more experienced than others. Possibly they're even working as teams. But this guy, he had a very well-seasoned, long length of history in his social profile. He had a mixture of men and women as friends. There was just no obvious signs, which is part of why I fell for it. So that was really an eye-opener. And they worked so slowly. A lot of scammers, they can't wait to, you know, get you in there, get you some money going their direction. This guy took it slowly, super slowly. And I have since learned because of my experience. So here's where we're at. So I reached a point where, of course, they were siphoning funds from me. And I'm thinking, okay, how am I going to make my bills? How can I earn money? What can I do here? And so that's when I pulled my stories that all my imaginations and I decided to go public with my stories. I've since written 4 books. This one is the 4th one. Trying to get some stories out there, hopefully generate some income from it. And I forget where I was going with this thought process here. At any rate, it led me to down that path. So when I realized finally, you know, that I had been scammed, I went back, because it does kind of mess with your senses. Like, okay, how did I go from being vigilant to suddenly I have been the victim of this manipulator? So I decided to trace back all the conversations and the history and the other people I interacted with that were involved in this, and create a timeline, and then reverse engineer that. And then, so mostly to make myself feel better, because I don't feel like I am someone who's dumb. I feel like I have at least some degree of intelligence, but like, well, why did I still fall for that? And so by doing my reverse engineering, researching, I came to understand that it's, you know, not only this is the way the manipulators work, but also, okay, how do they work in each of these scenarios? And with that, I decided that I was going to write a book. Now, there are already other books out there, you know, people with their experience of being scammed. And there's so much value in sharing your story. We'll talk about that later. But I wanted to do more than just share my story. I wanted to create a tool to help other people hopefully avoid the same situation in the first place, or if they're in it, to extricate themselves, or if they've got a loved one who they see struggling, to help them come to understand it. Now, here's the thing. When you're being scammed, there's a part of you that wonders and you're thinking about it. But if someone says to you, you are being scammed, it's not going to have the effect that you hope it would have on them, because that manipulator has twisted them around so much and given them this love and these, you know, feelings that obviously were missing in their life in some way. So there's huge trust with their manipulator. It's almost like Stockholm syndrome. But so even when someone from a place of authority or a very good, kind-hearted friend who's known you for years says you're being scammed, there's a part of you that doesn't believe it. There's a part of you that says, no, you're missing some of the details. And so it's almost like you are drowning in 3 feet of water. The help is right there. It's within reach, but that manipulator has you so turned around and so twisted that you think you're out in the deep ocean, that you are drowning, and all you have to do is stand up. But someone has to help you understand, okay, all you have to do is stand up. So one of the tools I wanted to provide, aside from the dialogue explaining each of these scenarios from the viewpoint of the scammer and then from the viewpoint of the person being scammed, I also wanted to create questionnaires. And I created a questionnaire for the person who might be scammed so that they could help answer their own questions and come to the conclusion on their own, much as you might like do for someone who is perhaps dealing with drug or alcohol. They have to come to that conclusion on their own that, oh, I have a problem. It's much the same with someone who's being scammed, because ultimately they are the only one who can help themselves. They're the only one who can stand up in that 3 feet of water. So I created a questionnaire for them, and in fact posted it on my blog yesterday, because I think that they should have access to that tool even if they don't read my book. I want them to have a resource. I also created questionnaires for the families who think, well, maybe are they being scammed? They say they're not being scammed, but what am I observing? So there's a questionnaire for friends and family. And I also include one for medical professionals, just because what if? Maybe there's something a medical professional could detect that perhaps friends and family wouldn't. So this is where we're at. That's kind of the gist of what I've been up to.
So very interesting. And I hope you don't mind, but I would like to dig in a little bit more.
Of course,
into the experience of being scammed.
Yes.
So the first time, did it happen quickly? What was your response to it? What did they manage to scam you out of? And then you've explained that like the second time you're very hyper vigilant. But what was the result of how you felt once you realized that you had fallen for that trap again?
So the very first time, and in my case, in both cases, it was business related. I was out there trying to promote a business, trying to find customers. And one of the things I had learned was that even if the person you're talking to isn't your customer, they could potentially lead you to a customer. So that was the basis on which I had these conversations. And so in the first one, he had expressed romantic interest, and then immediately I was like, nope, not looking, not interested. And but I kept talking to them in hopes that they again could lead me to a client. And that was the biggest mistake. That was the hugest mistake because it led to, well, can you do me this small favor? Which is really how they start. Even if they start a little quicker than this last one did, ultimately, it always starts with something that sounds innocent, sounds like a small favor, but really is just them getting you into the habit of saying yes. Because once you're in the habit of saying yes, no matter how crazy what things they ask, you're in the habit of saying yes. You don't want to disappoint, and they've built that relationship. So that really was it. I'm making it a rule now, based on my second experience, never to disclose the full amount of money lost. I will say that in both cases, I lost more the second time than the first time. And the first time was, a few thousand dollars, so you can do the math. But it's my opinion that, and this is based on the second one, that if you tell someone, no, I've been scammed before and I lost X amount of money, well, guess what? You've just given them a goal. Okay, her comfort level was X amount of dollars this time, so I'm going to push the limit and see if I can get to X this amount. So I have a very hard and fast rule now that I'll acknowledge that yes, I had been scammed, but will I tell a specific dollar amount? Not on your life.
I can respect that absolutely. So let's talk about the emotional toll that it took on you.
Yes. It's amazing. The very first time, I was surrounded by friends and family. I wasn't isolated, but I felt isolated. I was right there with them, going places, doing things, talking to them. But I felt emotionally distant, as though they could have been several states away for as distant as I was, because all of my attention was on that person on my phone. In fact, I'm thinking, wow, I need to write another book. I'm going to call it Romancing the Phone. And it's going to be about, being scammed in that way. But yeah, it's amazing how it makes you feel. And that one didn't hit me as hard. It hit me hard enough because financially, ouch. But the emotional distance, I definitely think I felt a little bit depressed during that time. I didn't recognize it for what it was, but there was definitely that emotional turmoil that the second time really did a number on me. I have never in my life felt the need to be on any kind of medication for depression. I think I'm pretty even keeled, but the second time, they had worked it up to a point where I did. I got thoroughly depressed. I woke up days thinking, I do not want to be alive. And I'm so thankful that I had my dog and my two cats to love on, because they were the reason I would still get up in the morning, because someone had to feed them. They needed what they needed. And in this case, where before I was surrounded by family and friends, in this case, my friends, while they're not far away, I don't have the same amount of support close at hand that I did before. So this one hit me harder in that way too. It's funny. They call them scam artists, but it's such a wrong terminology. They're so much more like a virus or a disease, the way they adapt, the way that they hurt people. I thought of so many different illustrations when I was writing my book, the foremost being the idea of a constrictor snake, like a boa constrictor, how they will wrap around their victim. And then as the br victim breathes and then they take a breath, and they deflate their lungs, well, that snake's coils wrap even tighter to the point of choking them off. And that's really what you feel as you're being manipulated, just when you think, okay, we're at the end, I can breathe. And they give you a little time to have that feeling. Oops, here's another obstacle. And then, you know, now this is needed. And just again, when you think, okay, we're there. Oh, here's something else. And so it squeezes you tighter and tighter. So really, there's so much emotional turmoil. As I said before, I wound up going on medication because I did not want to live. And that's even a more dangerous position to be in. If you tell a scammer that, look, I'm feeling so depressed, I only want to sleep, I'm on medication now, they're going, oh, good. Now I can really take you to the next level. Because if you're feeling that way, you are even more likely to do things that you never would consider doing if you were in your right mind.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So what was the turning point for you the second time around? You said the only reason why you were getting out of bed at that point was for your cats and dog. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was this hopelessness that you experienced. You ended up on medication. Mm-hmm. What changed for you? What helped you move beyond, right? Like, you started writing books, like you really wanted to be impactful and help other people avoid the trap that you have been in. What was the turning point for you?
Well, there's that saying about when you hit bottom, there's no place else to go but up. So I hit bottom. And it's not that there wasn't help out there. I had several friends step in and say, you know, they're a scammer. And you know what? Just give them our phone number. Let them reach out to us. We'll take care of it. If it's legitimate, we'll take care of it. But you have to block them, which was wonderful advice. It was the generosity of those friends to want to help me in that way. But in that state of mind, that was really hard advice to take. And I didn't do it effectively. I did follow their advice to a point, but not far enough to really free myself, because I could have been free of it so much sooner before I hit the rock bottom. Mm-hmm. But I did hit rock bottom. And when I did, when I was finally to a point where there was really nothing more they could possibly take from me, I was already down to the minimum amount of groceries I could buy and still live and still feed the animals too, because the animals, you know, they don't understand why they would be making a sacrifice. Whereas, you know, me, okay, I'll get by on, you know, I think of Marie Antoinette, let them eat cake. So I was eating cake for breakfast. I was making one cake for $1 a week and, you know, have that with my breakfast all week long, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So reaching that point where, okay, look, I have nothing left to give you. You're not going away, but look, I have nothing left to give you. I'm already at this point. And there had been a hint of romance at one point in that second scam, but it was like a flash in the pan. It was more about, okay, you are my fellow human being. You are in this desperate situation. I'm going to try to help you, which was where I was at when my friends tried to step in to help me. You know, if he's truly in this desperate situation, here's the resources. And I just, you know, I couldn't walk away. I didn't feel like I could walk away while someone, a fellow human being, was in that space. And I would have felt that way, man, woman, wouldn't have mattered. It was about, oh my goodness, no one should be treated the way that you appear to be treated right now. Mm-hmm. So hitting rock bottom when I had no money left, where I couldn't even pay my utilities. I was not able to truly be a responsible adult and do the things I had done prior to this whole situation. That was rock bottom. And that was when I finally did. I had been fed up with the whole thing for months, but that was it. Okay, we're done. I've jumped all these hoops. You still are, you know, causing problems, even though you escaped out of that horrible tragedy situation. And now you've got a new set of things for me. So that was when I once and for all cut them off. And from that point on, it was just about, okay, let me feed myself emotionally. Let me go do this timeline. Let me understand why I did what I did. By this time I had already done three books, which were all fiction, nice books. But this book, which is called Breaking Free, How Scammers Manipulate and How to Fight Back. That's the book we're talking about here, is based on, that breakdown and what to do about it to help others. And I pushed to get it out right away when I realized that we were coming up on National Slam the Scam Day here in the United States. I wanted to get that out there sooner than what I originally planned for that reason. But that was the turning point for me. And now pushing forward and building and taking it even beyond that. I mentioned before our show that you were my third podcast interview. And before I started talking to, on the podcast about my book, I had never even imagined being on a podcast in my life, let alone doing one. But after my first experience, which was so great, and every experience since has been so great, I got to thinking, okay, well, I've already created this wonderful tool. I hope that will be so useful to people if they use it. And I really hope that I'll get feedback from people that, yes, your tool did help me. I want to take it a step further because there was a time when, when people were raped, it was swept under the rug. They didn't have the resources because they were shamed. And I feel like it's that way too with people who are scammed. It's like financial rape, but they're afraid to report it or they're afraid to admit to it. Even myself, the first time, I don't think I really told anyone I had been scammed. Maybe my brother or, someone close, but I never really owned it. This time, even though it's been slow, I've been like layers of an onion, just a little bit by little bit. But I've talked to my friend, I've talked to my brother. There are others who know now that. So trying to come out and have a voice and not be ashamed that someone took advantage. And I want to give that same opportunity to people in a podcast because there's no such thing right now where people have a voice to explain, okay, this is what happened to me. This is how I felt by the person who manipulated me, but this is also how I felt by the people who tried to help me. And I'll give you, for instance, there's like this distortion. You hear the words clearly, but they get distorted, the meaning. So when I was in the midst of my situation and had talked to people to help me out, and they said, "We believe you're being scammed," I heard those words. These were the same people who offered, well, give them my contact number. But what I heard internally is, well, no one but someone with bad intentions could ever love you. That's what I heard internally. And it was very hurtful. And I know my friends had no intention to hurt me. That was the furthest thing from their mind. I believe that if they heard this podcast, they would be shocked to know that's what I heard in my head based on what they said. But that is, the words get distorted when you're in that mental turmoil.
When you are sitting in shame because of what you've experienced, even when people are being helpful, that shame becomes this wall that is like insurmountable for anybody because of the narratives you're telling yourself. Like you already feel pretty bad about what you've been through. And you hold on to it because of the shame or the guilt that you might feel as a result of what you've been through. Then, when you open up to someone, this is exposing yourself. This is pure vulnerability. And it's not about putting down the narratives that you've been telling yourself that kept you quiet. It's now like I'm amplifying this shame. And if it's not received exactly how I pictured it can get distorted, or and I can relate to that. For me, when I started telling people about the abuse that I endured, it was I had held on to years of events, and now I'm exposing myself, and the slightest little off comment puts me back in a shell.
Right. Yeah. It's like a flashback to that way you felt in that moment. Absolutely. So I really want to give people the opportunity in the podcast that I hope to do to, first of all, get their story out there. And I understand, that it takes a little bit of, I'm going to call it bravery, to put yourself out there, to do
Courage.
that. So I'm hopeful that even if they don't want to show their face, like in this situation, face to face, if they want to have a black screen, even if they want to use a name that's not theirs, as long as their story is true, I think their story should be heard. And if they, I'm hoping to create a safe space. I also want an opportunity to help people who can't even fathom the idea of being scammed. The people who are like, how did you end up being scammed? I would like the opportunity for them to hear these stories and to be educated in, well, this is what's going on. This is what you're missing. You're seeing the surface, you're not seeing the undercurrents. And I want you to understand that the words you say, even though they're kindly meant, this is how they're coming through to these people. So that when you approach your loved one and you say to your loved one, you're being scammed, you understand now why your loved one is going, no, I'm not. And you don't love me, but this person over here does, this person who's hurting me. I really want that to be out there. I'm hoping too to have maybe some therapists on my show. I would love to have some local law enforcement, maybe, whatever levels of law enforcement. I would just love to have as complete a picture for people as possible of, here's what's going on, here's the aftermath, here are tools you can use to get out of that. Because only by shedding that light, pulling things out in the open where the sun can shine and where things can come fully to light, I think will we make any progress in dealing with these situations.
But your story brings up a very important point, and I am quite honest about my pivot. This journey for me is quite new, talking about survival mode, being very vocal about the residual impacts of trauma. The one thing that triggered me, though, was victim shaming. I saw very publicly the situation with Cassie and Diddy. And that angered me so much because there's so much danger in placing the blame on the wrong person, right?
Yes, right.
I wrote a post on Facebook a while ago and I said that victim shaming is abuse too. Because what it does, it silences the victims, it perpetuates the shame that they're already feeling, and it allows the people who created the circumstances and situations
More
to often
power.
get away because people lose their voice, right? Because they aren't received in ways that will allow them to want to continue to be vulnerable. I think it's very important for listeners to understand that even if you don't understand the circumstances under which someone is experiencing trauma, experiencing these feelings of low self-worth and shame and pain as a result of being manipulated, and having to face circumstances very much on their own in silence. Your words, your compassion, your ability to hold a safe space for them means the world. So if someone is coming to you with something that, yeah, you may not understand fully, I'm asking that you pack your opinion away.
It's their truth,
Yes,
and they
and
have the right to
support.
say their truth.
Exactly. And support them because they are coming to you from a place of trust. And they may be trusting you more than they trust themselves because oftentimes they re-victimize themselves by re-examining and blaming themselves for the decisions they made that ended them up in that circumstance.
You're so right. Yes. Yeah, we have to be so careful about the way we respond to people, even about the questions we ask, because I'm sure it can trigger people. I still, as I've been preparing for each of these broadcasts and I've been thinking and going back and analyzing, I've actually been losing sleep at night thinking about these things because, at one point I thought, okay, I'm just going to write this book and I'm going to put it to bed and I've helped people. But having to unpack it and talk about it and think it through and think about what am I going to share with this particular podcast? Because everyone has their own different story slant as we're talking about this. But absolutely, when they come on the program, my hope is that, they will be able to share and help educate. But I hope too that there'll be some healing in that for them. Truthfully, I'm hoping that they've reached a point where they've processed most of it. I'm hoping that, like me, they waited until they'd had time to process so that they could talk coherently, and express themselves. I do think we have to heal emotionally up to a point to really be comfortable in this type of situation. So it's my hope that that would be the case.
Yeah, and that is particularly true for anybody that's experienced trauma. There has to be time to process because the rawness of it all, we cannot ignore how that impacts us emotionally. And when we are impacted from that point of view, it perpetuates through every part of our lives. I can imagine trusting for you is an uphill battle because simply because of what you've been through, you aren't will not be the person who's like, I'm an open book and I trust you from the beginning. Your trust for you will have to be earned. And then
You're
it's
right.
something quite, I mean, it's like a silver platter that you're handing somebody because it's something that was stripped from you as a result of your experiences.
Well, and even more than that, I even trusting myself is a challenge. I have come to the conclusion now that I need a keeper. So I'm appointing my best friend as my keeper from this point on. If there's something that's, questionable, even close to these things I've experienced, I'm going to be tagging my friend or my brother, my two closest, most relied upon people, because they think so clearly and so strategically. My sister's wonderful too, but these are the people that I usually look to for strategy. And I want to be able to hear, okay, what do you think? This is what I'm thinking, but am I thinking right? Because now, after these two bad experiences, I don't know that I trust myself to, hope to project myself the way that I once thought I could. So for certain, I'll be leaning on them more just to ensure that should that ever arise again, where I'm gonna just break one of my rules, before I break that rule, hey, my friend so and so, or my brother so and so, what do you think of this scenario? Is it worth it? And I know full well what the answer is going to be. They're going to say no, but I still want to hear them say
And you
it.
know, it's very interesting you say that. Like one of the journeys beyond our trauma is that process of trusting ourselves again. You know, and it takes a lot of work. Especially if the experience has happened more than once, because then it definitely puts our decision-making process into question. And I mean, anybody that goes through things that changes the way that they see themselves will result in having to spend some time re-examining what trust looks like for them. Zoe, I really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your experience. Now tell us how we can connect with you online.
Thank you. So I do have a website and it's just, zoemichaels.com. I kept it simple. I also have a Facebook page. I actually technically have two Facebook pages, but I'm trying to get everyone over to the new one. The original Facebook page was just Zoe Michaels, but now it's Zoe Michaels author,
Author.
which is the professional one that I'm trying to get everyone moved over to. So if you're currently on Zoe Michaels, please switch over to Zoe Michaels author so I can get rid of the old Facebook page. And be sure to keep up with my blog. On my blog, this video will be also linked, as well as other videos that are tied in with my books. But all my contact information is on my website, zoemichaels.com.
Okay, and we will put all of that information in the show notes. So before we wrap it up, Zoe, one key takeaway for the audience.
Trust your instincts. If you think you are being scammed, I guarantee 99% you are being scammed. If you're not sure, find someone you trust. Please, if you don't have anyone you can trust, or even if you do, I have that assessment for free on my blog. Please, please answer the questions, answer them honestly, and then make an informed decision. So if you don't do anything else, at least take what I'm giving for free.
Yes, audience, trust your instincts and definitely check out those resources that are available through Zoe's website. So, thank you again, Zoe, for your time. Thank you, listeners, for catching another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. And I just want to remind you, you were not built to break. You damn sure were not built to just survive. Disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I will see you next week.